You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. From Grand Tours to Group Rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today, we are in Jerusalem.
Cozze, citere, cozze, cozze, piscine, nu spicudeci cora, nu spicudeci cora. Cozze, citere, cozze, cozze, piscine, nu spicudeci cora, se nu mangiano le femmine.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Jerusalem, in the courtyard of the St. George's Pilgrim Guest House, where we are staying for a couple of nights before moving on to Tel Aviv tomorrow.
We are. We arrived late last night in Jerusalem. I should say that's Lionel Burney. My name is Richard Moore. We will be your guides to the Giro d'Italia. If you're tuning in for the first time, we'll be producing nightly episodes from the Giro d'Italia. This is number one. Daniel Freib is at the Tour de Yorkshire at the moment. He'll be jetting in on Monday to join the coverage. Strange. Here we are at Giro d'Italia in Israel. And we've been building up to this for a long time. It's not been without its controversies, and we've talked a lot about these in the build-up to the race. But we arrived, as I said, late last night. We did a bit of a tourist thing this morning. We were able to walk into the old city and have a look around and cram in as much as we could, really, before the racing got underway. And there was a lot that happened in the racing. I should say that we're producing a special episode on Israel and Jerusalem, the first of our Kilometre Zero episodes, which will come out Monday morning for friends of the podcast. But we'll talk a bit about that later on in the episode, about our first impressions here and so on. There is a lot to talk about. It was a time trial, not a prologue, because it was a bit long for a prologue, and quite a decisive victory by Tom Dumoulin. But Lionel, give us the tale of the tapper, please.
The inaugural tale of the tapper from the Giro. Yeah, well, the race picked up where it left off last year with Tom Dumoulin in the pink jersey again. The defending champion won the opening stage in Jerusalem by just 2 seconds from BMC Racing's Rowan Dennis. Rowan Dennis, the Australian time trial champion, had looked like he might, he might complete the set of all three Grand Tour leaders' jerseys, having won the opening stage of the Tour de France in 2015, having taken the red jersey when BMC won the Vuelta's team time trial in Nîmes last year. He was looking to complete the set. He came oh so close, but Tom Dumoulin pipped him by 2 seconds. There was a little scare for Dennis earlier on when Lotto Fix All, they're called for this Giro. They've got Soudal, one of the co-sponsors, they're called Fix All. It's some kind of grout and stuff that you stick tiles on the wall with, and glues and that kind of thing. Yeah, important stuff, Rich. Raising your eyebrow. But Victor Campanets went very close to beating Rowan Dennis's time. But it was Dumoulin who finished on top of the leaderboard. The other big news today was that Chris Froome crashed in his warm-up ride. A slowish crash on a corner. But he was sort of scuffed up and bruised, and it obviously compromised his performance a bit, because he was down in 21st place, 37 seconds conceded to Dumoulin already. Of the other GC riders, well, the most outstanding ride of the day, I would say, was Simon Yates of Mitchelton Scott. Not a noted time trialist, but good in these kind of efforts, better than perhaps people think.
Certainly. I think we covered that in the last podcast.
Yeah,
in fact.
Conceded only 20 seconds to Dumoulin. Domenico Pozzovivo was 10th at 27 seconds. And then of the other GC riders, Thibaut Pinot lost 33 seconds. Esteban Chavez, 46 seconds. Fabio Aru, 50 seconds. Miguel Angel Lopez, 56 seconds. That's the Astana leader. He also crashed in the warm-up, as did Bahrain Merida's Konstantin Siutsu. And he crashed so badly, fractured a vertebrae, and is out of the race already. So Bahrain already down to seven riders. Vertebrae, I think, from the communique at the finish.
He did a Matt White, didn't he? Matt White did that at the Tour de France 1 year, and they were able to call in a replacement. Not so easy when the race starts in Jerusalem. So he's out, and Bahrain down to seven riders. Victor Campenaerts, was it not at the Giro last year that he used the time trial to convey a message of love?
He proposed to his girlfriend, didn't he?
He asked someone out.
Oh, did he ask him out? That's right. Yes, it was. Yeah, yeah.
And he's since moved teams. And a far more effective way of impressing a female, I would have thought, finishing second, third in the time trial. But what do I know? Anyway, the moulin, obviously, the story of the day. I mean, he looked very impressive in his rainbow jersey as world time trial champion. And really, you know, he did look very smooth. And everybody had sort of, I think, assumed that Dennis was going to hold on and win the time trial. It looked a done deal. I think because the course was quite technical, and we thought that guys with GC ambitions might just hold off sufficiently on the corners and so on, that it might tilt it for Dennis. But I asked Dumoulin about that in the press conference, actually, and he kind of batted the question away. He said that if you take a good corner, then, you know, that it wasn't dangerous. It was only dangerous if you didn't take the corners well. It's basically what he said, which is a bit of a...
Well, it's easy to go fast when you stay upright, and that's what it's all about, isn't it? I mean, that's why, you know, it's about judgment as well as speed, and he's got the lot. And, you know, him and the Giro, Tom Dumoulin and the Giro, really is a love affair, isn't it? This is the third year in a row that he's worn the pink jersey. 2 years ago, he won the opening time trial in Apeldoorn. Then he got sick and lost quite a bit of time. He stuck around in the race hoping that he would win the time trial in Chianti, but had a disappointing result there and then pulled out of the race. Last year, of course, it was a time trial that's put the seal on everything for him. He was dominant at Montefalco, more or less held the pink jersey all the way to the end, apart from the unfortunate number two gate where he had to stop to answer the most inconvenient call of nature. Lost the pink jersey but regained it in the final time trial in Milan.
He actually held on to the pink jersey the day of
Poo Gate, didn't he? Yes.
Yeah, and he only lost it a couple of days before Milan. But the point is that the race was incredibly close. You know, going into the time trial in Milan, four riders could still win it. And those margins, you know, that's how Grand Tours tend to be won these days. And he's put a lot of time into quite a few good riders here.
Absolutely. I mean, we say it all the time, don't we, that you can't win the race on the first day, but if you can take as much as half a minute out of some major rivals, all the climbers, that is a huge bonus. I mean, he was asked also in the press conference whether he has any thoughts about holding the pink jersey from start to finish. I mean, very unlikely that would be possible anyway. But he also said that the team are not gearing up for that at all. They'll let the jersey go, I guess, at a point when they can, because they don't want to have to defend it all the way, particularly through Sicily and then the tricky stages in the Apennines. And then, you know, that there's a lot of tricky stages before you get to the proper climbing stages. So he's in a great position. He's ahead of all of his rivals, but he doesn't need to be ahead of absolutely everybody in the race.
Well, speaking of his teammates, I spoke to Sam Omen at the finish. Sam Omen is a young rider who started the Vuelta last year, was riding extremely well, but got sick and had to pull out. He's very, very promising and very highly thought of. He is, I guess he'll be Dumoulin's number two, if I can use that expression, in the mountains. Dumoulin's number two in the mountains, unfortunate connotations. But he will be Dumoulin's number two in the mountains. Last year, of course, his initial number two in the mountains, Wilco Kelderman, crashed out early in the race. And we forget that Dumoulin, we talked a lot last year about Dumoulin's team not being that strong, but we kind of overlooked the fact that he'd lost his strongest teammate.
Yeah, that was on the stage to Blockhouse, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And really, it was a pretty inexperienced looking Sunweb team last year, wasn't it? I mean, this year, having Sam Omen, you know, clearly a talent, clearly a good climber, could well be absolutely vital for him as the race goes on. But let's hear what he had to say after the finish.
Big performance there by Tom. Are you surprised to see how well he rode there?
Actually, he had a hard beginning of the season, so in that case, yeah, we didn't really know what to expect, but for sure he's world champion time trial, and a prologue like this, twisty, up and down, that suits him really well, so I'm just really happy for him, yeah.
And it was a technical course, wasn't it? So dangerous, we saw that in the warm-ups and places. I guess for him, the stakes were quite high because his main aim here is to try and win the race overall.
Yeah, that's true, but I think if you can start with a victory, that's already a big boost also for the confidence. So in that case, it's also really contributing to aim for the overall GC. So and I think he saw a course which suited him really well, and he took... yeah, he immediately took the shot.
37 seconds on Chris Froome already. Yeah. What about you? You've got a big job to do in this Giro as well, haven't you?
I guess so, yeah.
You were riding extremely well at the Vuelta last year before I think you fell ill, didn't you? So you'd be keen to obviously get through this Giro better than you did at the Vuelta.
Yeah, in the first place I hope to reach Rome without any trouble and without any bad luck. And I hope to be really a big help for Tom in the mountains, because it's going to be a big battle for sure.
Good luck.
Thank you.
San Francisco. A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much to our main sponsor, Rafa. Their support enables us to be here covering the Giro d'Italia, as we will be at all three Grand Tours, of course.
We will, yeah. And Rafa are selling our Pedaleur de Charme jerseys and T-shirts and caps, aren't they? Rafa.cc is the Rafa website. Alternatively, you can go to thecyclingpodcast.com/shop and see the range of stuff we've got available. Pedaleur de Charme jersey in a lovely light blue.
Pedaleurs de Charme
T-shirts. Pedaleur de Charme caps. All available for anyone who wants one.
And we will be awarding Pedaleur de Charme to riders here at the Giro, one a week. So the first one will be towards the end of the first week. Around midweek, we'll be asking for nominations, but keep your eyes out for any charming pedalling.
Yep, charming pedalling.
Any contenders today? There's a tough one.
Oh, I saw a lot of pedalling. But nothing stood out to me today on the charming front. It's got to be, this is the thing, it's got to be something slightly offbeat,
Tell you what I did notice around Jerusalem, and in the old city, there are a lot of signs saying no electric bikes, which was kind of quirky the first time we saw it. But in Jerusalem itself, and it is a hilly place, but everyone's on an electric bike. I mean, not the riders in the race, but the normal punters, people just going around on quite high-powered electric bikes.
Wow.
They're popular here.
I've not noticed that either.
Yeah, just a little observation I made. And we heard before the little break there from Sam Oman, young rider on Team Sunweb. And speaking to the team, Louis Vervec is another one who's very highly rated, and they're expecting great things from. They've got some experience on the team. Lawrence Tendam, Chad Haga now is quite experienced as well. Roy Curvers on the flat stages. Young Australian Chris Hamilton as well. But they've got four under-25s in their team, which makes them one of the youngest teams. I don't think there's another team with as many. There isn't another team with as many young riders on it, and that's the team of the defending champion. One other little thing from Dumoulin's press conference, or two other things. He said that he was wearing the pink jersey over the World Champions jersey, and he described those as the two most important jerseys in cycling. Controversial.
Well, I mean, I said it was a love affair between Dumoulin and the Giro, and clearly it is. I mean, you know, buttering up. He got a wry smile there, didn't it? Or not a wry smile, quite a satisfied smile from Manolo, the press chief of the Giro, who was sitting on the top table in the press conference. It was a beautifully delivered line. He unzipped his pink jersey to show the rainbow bands, and, well, I mean, it'd be interesting.
He's a bit of a charmer, though, isn't he, Dumoulin?
Yeah, getting everybody on side early on.
Yeah. So he started the Giro very well. I was interested as well to hear him mention that he had gone out and taken in some of the sights and sounds of Jerusalem. We were curious to know how many riders, a lot of riders, frankly, could be anywhere, I think. They fly in and they live in a hotel room and they race and they could be anywhere. So how many of them have actually lifted their heads up and had a look around? And some of them have. Ben King has been out wandering around the old city, Dimension Data rider. Tom Dumoulin, the night he arrived, went off on his bike in his normal clothes into the old city and rode around and up and down steps and so on, apparently. And yeah, that was quite interesting. We're going to tomorrow ask around a bit more and see if any other riders did the tourist thing while they've been here. But the other big story today, of course, was Chris Froome, who crashed. Now, it was reported that he crashed once, and there's footage of him crashing once. One or two people said that he actually crashed twice. The team denied that. But some people seemed convinced that he'd crashed twice. He was pretty bashed up. It looked sore.
He was pedalling smoothly enough, but with all these things, it's how he sleeps and recovers. And yeah, I mean, he didn't look thrilled at the finish. I mean, it's not just the time loss, but falling off, you know, within an hour or so, an hour and a half or so of your first big objective of the season, far from an ideal start.
2013, echoes of 2013 in Corsica, where he fell off in the neutralised zone. Went on to win that tour, of course.
Yeah, well, Nicola Portal, Sky's sports director, mentioned that. Let's hear from Nico Portal and then a little bit from Chris Froome.
Yeah, I mean, it could be worse. So he can, you know, we can see on the GT, he can push hard. Probably not at his best, but I don't know. I don't know if we win the TT, I'm not sure about that. I think we're happy with the situation. I remember the first time we did it together in 13, he crashed on a trail in Corsica pretty badly. And, you know, I mean, yeah, it's part of the job, I would say. But obviously, yeah, before the time trial, then at the end of day one, it's not an easy one mentally to manage. But he's a tough guy and he knows it can happen. So I think he was ready. Straight away, said Nico, all good. So boom, we're back on the business and we carry on. You know, you've been on the press conference and there's been a lot of questions about this more than on the cycling side, on the sporting side. So for sure, I don't know how much destruction he is, but he is. But he's a really hard man, you know. And the mental is unbelievable and we're here to race. And now, you know, just place to the racing. And yeah, I think we're all ready. So now we don't even think about it. We just go full gas.
Just grateful it wasn't more serious. I mean, a few guys came down today and some were pretty badly injured, so just grateful it wasn't more serious. I mean, a crash is always going to hurt for sure. It's not ideal to race just after having crashed, but that's bike racing and it's all part of the sport. I was probably braking round a corner and turning at the same time and the front wheel went.
Well, Nicolas Portal and Chris Froome there putting a brave face on things. Friday evening here in Jerusalem, the call to prayer, is that? Well, we just paused there for the Muslim call to prayer from the mosque just down the road there. And I think you got a sense there of the deflation in Chris Froome's voice. Quite impressed, really, that he spoke at all, really, this evening. He warmed down for a fairly long time. You know, it's difficult to say that his Giro is over because it's not. That time could be made up, but it's never good to start on the back foot, quite so solidly on the back foot, is it?
Not against someone like Tom Dumoulin as well, but also I just have it. There's a sense around Froome of it being a bit like 2014 when, you know, he was defending his Tour de France title and he crashed a couple of times, and crashes never seem like just pure coincidence. There always seems to be a reason for it, if you like, and you know, I think that Froome needed everything to go right here. He's got a very, very strong team, but a strong team is worthless if you're not strong enough yourself to go toe-to-toe with Dumoulin, with Pinot, with these other guys.
Well, one of the things about Froome is not just his physical resilience, but his mental robustness, you know. But the last 24 hours or so won't have been easy for him, because the pre-race press conferences, the issue of the ongoing unresolved salbutamol adverse analytical finding from last year's Vuelta, it's still hanging over him and the team. You know, some Mauro Venni was asked in a press conference for his a take on things, particularly when because it emerged that Froome and Team Sky knew that there had been this adverse analytical finding from the Vuelta at the time that they were negotiating the detail, and particularly the financial detail, of Froome's participation here. And Venu was asked whether he felt let down, betrayed, and he
deceived.
Said, deceived, yeah. And he said he did feel deceived. And so to have the race director say that on the eve of the race, and also say that, you know, he'd been assured by the UCI or by David Le Partion that Froome would not be stripped of the result if the adverse analytical finding case is upheld and goes against Froome, would he be stripped of the Giro result? That's the great, you know, well, we don't know one way or the other, but Le Partion is saying that that's, you know, he made no such guarantees and there are no such guarantees. And so the whole thing is really, it's really cloudy at the moment. And if it's cloudy for us, for the viewers watching, for Team Sky and Chris Froome, I don't care how mentally strong you are. If that is occupying even 5% of your brain space, it must have an effect.
It's shambolic, isn't it? And I mean, Venu said that Le Partion had assured him that if Froome did win the Giro, that title wouldn't be a Contador situation, which we had in 2011 when Contador won the Giro and then was subsequently stripped of it for a doping case that was a you know pre-existing doping case. It wouldn't surprise me if Le Partion did offer that assurance, because we've seen with Le Partion, he does have a bit of a loose tongue, it would appear.
The UCI, you saying what he thinks people want to hear?
Well,
in any given circumstance,
UCI then put out a statement saying that, you know, it's not up to him to decide. Now, with an adverse analytical finding as opposed to a prohibited substance, there is a possibility that a ban would start, if Froome is to be banned, that a ban would start after the Giro, and and all these races between the Vuelta and now would be okay in terms of the results standing, so he would keep his, I don't know, 20th place at the Ruta del Sol or whatever it was. But, you know, the Le Partion is not really he can't dictate that. It has to go through the proper channels and procedures, obviously.
Yeah, it's ironic, isn't it? I mean, when Brian Cookson was the UCI president, you know, everyone suspected that Cookson was involved in and influencing anti-doping policy, and really the president's role is not to do that. Now we have Le Partion, and he seems publicly at least to want to have that influence and shape the way that these things are going. So it's, I have sympathy for Venu, because the negotiations were, you know, they were undertaken in good faith. Not, you know, Chris Froome had just won the Tour and the Vuelta back to back. You know, why wouldn't Venu want Chris Froome in the race? But of course, he wasn't in full possession of the facts. But I can also see Team Sky's point of view, because this whole process, had it been another rider, had it not been leaked, could very well have just been ongoing behind closed doors, with complete anonymity and without this being played out in the public domain. But it's not worked out like that, and so we are left with a bit of a pickle. And in some ways, you know, having Chris Froome sort of, you know, his GC hopes compromised on day one, you know, it might simplify things when the Giro come to reflect on what sort of race that they've got in their hands on, you know, the mountain stages in the second, third weeks.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Independent research shows 10% of sports nutrition products would get a professional rider banned. Trust Science in Sport, the world's highest standard of banned substance testing.
Thank you to Science in Sport for their sponsorship of the Cycling Podcast. They are also offering you, the listener, 25% off all your Science in Sport products at scienceofsport.com if you enter the code SISCP25, SISCP25. Thank you again to Science of Sport. Now, a few odds and ends from the day, Lionel. A couple of talking points were the performance of Simon Yates and the near miss for Rohan Dennis. You spoke at the finish to Dennis's sports director, Max Chiandri.
Yeah, well, Max, we spoke to Max on the podcast a week or so ago, after BMC Racing's owner and biggest benefactor and biggest supporter, Andy Rees, had died. And Max had been talking about how a victory, you know, they would like to bring in a victory to pay tribute to Andy Rees and the contribution he made to the team. Max, after we'd recorded, he said that he had you know, given a bit of a talk that win something for Andy, and the time trial was the most obvious one. I mean, if you look at the roster, Rowan Dennis is by far the most accomplished rider in the team. And everything was looking so good. And I waited at the BMC tent up at the finish there for the car to come back. And Max and Marco Pinotti, who is the time trial coach for BMC, they looked pretty bereft, actually, just sat staring into space, not talking to one another. Initially sort of waved away my approach, but Max did then get out of the car, and here is what he said.
No real words. Kind of just analysing in our heads now, you know, where we could have gained a couple seconds, maybe some corners, one corner, but I think he did a fantastic TT run. He gave it everything. Plan was good. He executed it good. You know, I mean, Dumoulin won, so I mean, he got won the Giro. Last guy, guys will win time trials, win Grand Tours. So yeah, nothing really you can say.
Did the fact that a couple of riders fell in warm up change anything at all from the recon ride?
No. Ron just kept his standard. What we usually does started. We looked at wind. You know, obviously, the weather forecast we look at gave us like not so much wind when we started, and a little bit more wind later on. Kind of planned out yes and no as we predicted. We kept everything the same. We did three laps this morning, went out pretty early. Well, you know, just we kept it to standard. So I think everything was done perfect on our side.
When Campanet got so close, did you then know it's Dumoulin or Dennis now?
Yeah, for sure. We knew the last plot of guys were going to be the most important in winning and losing. Race radar wasn't not much on the other side, especially on the split side. So yeah, it's just, you know, we're just fingers crossed. Really, what could we do?
And just lastly, I mean, this would have been obviously a fantastic victory after Andy Reid passed away, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously it was my phase one, I'd say, in the whole process to this Giro, was trying to get this jersey, and the plan and the dream was to bring it to Italy, you know. So we had two stages here, but you know, so we're just talking about things what did not happen. Would I love to happen? I would love to have that jersey and honor Andy's dreams and wishes to be one of the best teams in the world and be up there, but it didn't happen. But you know, we're at the start, so you know, we have to move on. We're looking at tomorrow. We have a long Giro in front of us, a lot of good stages, we have some good riders, so we're up there.
So BMC's dream of winning the pink jersey today and taking it back to Italy, well, Tom Dumoulin had plenty to say about that. Unlikely that Rowan Dennis is going to be able to unseat Dumoulin in the next couple of days, I would have said, looking at the course. It's going to be pretty sprintery the next couple of days.
It is. Funnily enough, it was a funny old start to the time trial today. It was basically out the start house and straight up a hill. Mm. It was really hard looking, and the riders were quite slow, really, you know, because it was tough. It was a sticky old road and one of these deceptive climbs that just kind of goes on, doesn't look particularly steep, but just sort of soaks up the effort. I was standing with the Education First team, and Joe Dombrowski was there, and a rider came rocketing towards us, and Dombrowski said, this guy's going to smash it. And I said, who is he? He says, I don't know, but he rides for Quickstep. Which, fair assumption, it was actually Elia Viviani, and he did look like he was going very fast. And I didn't actually look up his time. Lionel, maybe you can look that up for me while I'm talking. But he's somebody who I expect we will see in the next couple of days, and you know, perhaps he could be somebody to unseat Tom Dumoulin. That would obviously suit Dumoulin.
Oh well, Elia Viviani was 122nd, 1:17. So if he was smashing it on the climb, maybe he paid for that.
He looked very, very good over the first 400 metres.
But even with the time bonuses of 10, 6 and 4 seconds, it's going to take him quite a few days.
If he wins the first 7 stages or so.
Yeah, he's got to win on Etna then, stages, hasn't he? That's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's unlikely, isn't it, that he's going to be in the pink jersey. Anyway, that was an impression that we had. The other big talking point, I suppose, from the top 10 was Simon Yates, who put in a very good time trial. Well, in fact, the time trial of his life, according to his sports director, Matt White, who I spoke to at the finish.
I mean, we said Simon Yates, he can do a good time trial, but that was pretty exceptional today, was it not?
Definitely. That's probably the best time trial he's done in his career. So to be top 10, it certainly exceeded our expectations. We said before, once we actually could see the course, we knew it was a course that's it's a very good bike handler. And because of the constant change of speed and the amount of uphill, it's a time trial that suited him. And he took some good risks, well calculated, and it's a nice start.
Did you follow him in the car?
I did.
I mean, when you saw those risks, did you sort of...
No, because the one corner that one of our teammates, Jack Haig, crashed on, he didn't risk on that one. But the other corners, he a very good bike hander, and he took calculated risks. So.
The big question is always, what do these tell us? I mean, about his condition, about his form?
Nothing that we haven't seen already this year, that he's in a good place. He's in a good place. We're not going to see the first real test of the GC guys until we get to Sicily. But it's always nice to take time on guys, and we haven't lost too much on anybody, so it's a really good start.
It feels like the Giro is... finally here when you hear from Matt White, doesn't
look,
it?
Look, I asked him if they've still got the toilet roll in the car, and they have. We're going to go and actually...
Is that story in the public domain yet?
Yeah, I think it is.
Is it in the Friends special from last year?
It's in the Friends special with Matt
from
White.
From this year? Mm. Ah, from Matt White. Of course it is. Yeah, look, it's Lunch with Matt White.
Yeah.
Part of the Friends of the Podcast.
So if you're a friend of the podcast, you'll get the significance of that story. And if you're not, sign up to find out.
thecyclingpodcast.com/friends.
Yeah, we will be releasing Kilometre Zero Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays throughout the Giro, starting this coming Monday, for friends of the podcast only at thecyclingpodcast.com. £15 for a whole year of exclusive content.
And the first episode will be our impressions of the 3 days in Israel. We've had our first day here, first day in a bit.
What surprised you most, Lionel?
Well, that's a very difficult question, because... what were my preconceptions? I'm not really sure what I was expecting, but the walk through the old city was mind-blowing, really. Not what I was expecting at all. We went in via the Damascus Gate, entered into the Muslim quarter. There's also a Jewish quarter, an Armenian quarter, and a Christian quarter. We went through the little security checkpoint to get into the Jewish quarter, went up to the Western Wall, watched as people were praying, and really in the space of about a quarter of an hour, we saw, because it's Friday and apparently this is a ritual on a Friday, the Christians carry a cross on the journey that Jesus Christ took the cross on. His final journey, and we went into the church where he was put on the cross and where he was resurrected, if you if that's what you believe. I mean, this is where, for me, it was a real eye opener, because I have no religion whatsoever.
The church was built later,
yeah, but on the site of the crucifixion, and
obviously.
And there was one moment where we stopped and there's a sort of a grate, and you look down about 8 feet, maybe 10 feet, to the, I guess, original or one of the very early walkways from the second to sixth century, it says. And I was talking to somebody a bit later on when we were watching the time trial, and basically brought home to me that Jerusalem, it's been kind of built on and built on and built on. It's been destroyed and built on by somebody else, and then destroyed and built on by somebody else. And three of the major religions all share this space. So you can stand in the Jewish quarter and see the huge and impressive gold dome of the mosque. And just, 2 minutes walk up the... behind you is a place of Christian pilgrimage. And it wasn't what I was expecting at all. And I have to be honest, it wasn't on my list of places to come and visit, but I'm very glad that I've walked around, and it just brought home to me that all of the kind of the reading at home, trying to prepare myself for, being here in Israel and understanding a bit of the history, the politics and the religion of it. I mean, I don't think I could... I don't think I could have prepared myself for it. I mean, there's so much... It just brought home to me how little I understand.
Yeah, really. We've met a couple some of the local people today. A couple of listeners to the podcast actually got in touch and offered to help us and guide us around Jerusalem. And we've spoken to them. You'll hear from them in this first episode of Kilometre Zero. Very interesting to get their perspective on living here, on life here. And I think what, you know, that in the old city itself, it is, it's pretty frenetic, and there's lots of people, lots of tourists, and lots of people from these different faiths and religions, and it's quite chaotic but quite peaceful, and yet every so often there'd be a little space carved out for armed police, and that was quite jarring really, to walk around the corner and see such a heavily armed, you know, presence of police. I was actually surprised that at the stage itself, how light the security was. There was a checkpoint on the way into the race area, but it was very, very sort of token, a glance in a bag, and in you were into that bubble. And, you know, on the course itself, there didn't seem to be much security at all in terms of police, army, and so on. It all seemed...
Well, yeah, but the flip side to that would be that people would say, well, the security is being deployed at the borders, isn't mm-hmm. it? At the, you know, the border with the West Bank, which we will go and see before we head off from Jerusalem tomorrow.
We will. Anyway, lots more to talk about in relation to that and our stay here and what some of the riders think of it as well. We're introducing a new-ish feature. We did sort of trial this a couple of weeks ago, but we've got a number now that you can call and leave a message, and some of these messages we will play in the podcast. We've got our first one to play tonight from Stephen Tunstall. We'll hear from him in a moment, but the number to call... it's not a number to call. You just leave a WhatsApp. That's what we want. A WhatsApp voice memo is what we want. Don't call us. No one will answer. The number is +447971338205. That's +447971338205. And if you go on the bottom right of the screen, there's a little icon of a microphone. Press on that. Hold to record, release to send, and send us your little voice memo. Here is someone who's here in Jerusalem and has been here all week, Stephen Tunstall.
Hi, Cycling Podcast. This is Stephen Tunstall, brackets, friend of the podcast, close brackets. I'm just calling in from down the road from you in Jerusalem. I'm in Jericho. It's literally down the road. It's 250 meters below sea level, despite this being a 20-minute drive away. And I'm here with a group of cyclists who have... yesterday cycled across from Tel Aviv through the West Bank and took this really dramatic descent down into Jericho, down into the Jordan Valley, a 1,000-meter descent. It was spectacular. And we're here because we wanted to demonstrate an act of solidarity with the Palestinian people who live in the West Bank and can't go and watch the Giro in Jerusalem because they're not allowed to go through the checkpoints or pass through the separation barrier, the wall. And we thought that was a great shame, and we wanted to just come and bring a bit of the cycling spirit to the West Bank and show the Palestinian people that although the world's media is focused on Jerusalem right now, that the rest of the cycling community is standing with them in their struggle for freedom. It's a fantastic place to cycle around the West Bank. Tomorrow we're going to cycle right from the top of the West Bank in Jenin down to almost Jerusalem, and the day after the south half of the West Bank. And this morning we had a fun ride in Jericho with 50 cyclists, lots of children, boys and girls, cycling around the city, and a real positive event. And there's many keen cyclists here that would love to get a bit of the taste of the Giro, and that's what we hope to bring them. So I just thought I'd call in and say hi, and really looking forward to the rest of your coverage of the Giro as well.
So that was our first or second voice message from Stephen Tunstall. If you've got something to say, a point to make, and we've been getting lots of correspondence in particular about the Giro starting here in Israel, very mixed, very some of it quite strongly expressed, but do leave your constructive messages there if you'd prefer, and we might play them over the next couple of days. We should wrap up for tonight though, Lionel. We'll be back tomorrow with stage two. Not expecting.
Goes from Haifa to Tel Aviv and will almost certainly be a sprint finish, I would have thought, looking at it.
Mm-hmm. You would think so. Well, that's all for now. Thank you, Lionel. Let's go and find something to eat.
Thank you, Richard.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa. Ci gira nella tenevo giardina.